Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Welcome to the second hour of Blood River Radio. And this is not Eddie, this is Matthew. If you're just tuning in, Eddie's not feeling, he's a little under the weather, he's not feeling well at all. And so lift him up in your prayers. But folks, we got another Dynamite Hour coming up. And for our guest this hour, we're going to have the Professor Emeritus of Psychology from California State University. And this man has been a legend among our circles. He's done great work for our people. He's a true fighter and an intellectual beyond 90% of intellectuals. I mean, just this man's work in organizing and delivering quality material for our people is amazing. So I'm going to introduce Dr. Kevin McDonald. How are you doing today, Dr. Kevin McDonald?
Doing pretty good. Thanks for your very kind introduction.
Well, happy Chinese New Year to you.
Let's throw that one. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I also
right around here, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I guess not. So, Dr. McDonald, we also have our friend and co-host Jacob Tyler on the radio with us today. How you doing, Jacob?
Mm-hmm. Hey, Matt, and hello, Dr. McDonald, and warm greetings to all of our listeners out there in Radio Land tonight. It's a pleasure and a privilege to be on the air with you guys. And Dr. McDonald, we've met in person on a number of occasions, and I'm thrilled and honored to be on with you tonight as well. So,
yeah, it's great seeing you or hearing you again.
just hearing this time. Usually we've seen and heard each other simultaneously, but you know.
It was live last time.
So, Dr. McDonald, Dr. McDonald, we've had some changes to the show since you last talked with Eddie, and things. Mm-hmm. Really haven't changed in the plot or plan of the show. So let's just start with, he told me you had a book coming out.
Well, yeah, it actually came out in September. It's on individualism. It's about our people, basically, and trying to understand this is sort of liberal tradition in the West. Certainly, we're not all liberals, but there is a strong tradition of it, and I try to understand it. To try to understand it via the idea of individualism. It's the West that is being inundated, so we have to try to understand the Western peoples and do something about it. Sort of understand ourselves is the first step, I think, to changing things.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree with that 100%. What is it? To thy own self be true? You have to know yourself and know your own people in order to solve any problems that are coming up. And the name of the book is what again?
It's Individualism and the Western Liberal Tradition. I should say, I think that Southerners have been pretty immune from this tradition. In America, it's really New England, the Puritan culture. That dominated America really until the 1950s, 1960s, when you started to have Jewish domination. It's a very important strand of America. That's what these are the people that really pushed for the Civil War. You know, they very strong sort of moral convictions, willing to take great losses. To actually harm people. On behalf of a moral ideal, that sort of thing, and it's been destructive in our history, and it's still going strong. I mean, today, liberals are still very strong among white people. They want to feel they're moral. They want to feel they're good people. They are very concerned what other people think about them, and. So that's the kind of strand of our culture that I'm trying to get at here and expose it for what it is. I mean, it's really a horrible. I mean, it's very detrimental at this stage in our history when we have we're really being dominated by this hostile elite that is in control of the media and can put out messages of guilt. These people are very prone to guilt, feeling bad about the past. I mean, even though relatively few people ever owned slaves, you know, you had the feeling that every white person somehow guilty for that. And a lot of people, you know, have internalized that. They believe that. They think they're a bad person because, you know, this happened a long time ago or whatever. They're still prone to that. You know, they're very easily made to feel guilty, to feel bad about themselves, to adopt black children from Africa, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's a huge problem that we have.
Jacob, do you have anything to add to that?
Absolutely. I had a couple questions for you in part to satisfy my own curiosity and everything, and then I suppose it would just be of interest in general to anyone out there in the audience who's pretty familiar with your work already, Dr. McDonald. And of course, you know, you're rather well known for all your work in the area of explaining and laying out how either deliberately or inadvertently Jewish people as a group undermine the power of the European Christian traditions, you know, throughout the Western world. And so yeah. I guess one of my first questions along the line, you know, pertaining to this newer book of yours is, would you describe this book more as a continuation of that work that you're already really well known for, or is this sort of a standalone project that doesn't really tie in directly with stuff like you know, the culture of critique and all that?
Well, it does, because the first seven chapters don't really mention Jews much at all. Well, it does, because I talk about the rise of Jewish influence you know, in the 20th century briefly, but in chapter six. But I, you know, the last two chapters, I really try to tie it all together. In other words, what the new book is on individualism, it's a historical sort of survey, and so I start, you know, prehistoric. I start with the Indo-Europeans. I talk about population genetics. I talked about the peoples who colonized Europe beginning, you know, 45,000 years ago. I talk about the Indo-Europeans and their very militarized culture. These people conquered most of the world, you know. And it's a very important part of our culture. I talk about the hunter-gatherer culture, especially in Northern Europe. But then I go through the history and bring it up to the present. So when you get to the 20th century, you have to start talking about Jewish influence. I mean, until the 20th century, I would say you could pretty much ignore Jews. I mean, they were, you know, important just here and there, but they didn't dominate our culture the way they do now, especially since the 1960s, it's been growing in the 20th century. And really, I'm not sure it's peaked yet. It continues.
Dr. McDonald, this is fascinating. We're going to let you finish up the thoughts on that as soon as we get back from this break. And folks, we got to pay some bills. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
Hey, listen up. This is a deep state alert. Former Texas Congressman Steve Stockman, who moved to arrest Lois Lerner for contempt of Congress, has been imprisoned by the very office that Lerner led. You heard right. Stockman hit the Obama administration hard, and they hit back with the full force of the federal government. The guy who said he wanted Mark Levin as Speaker of the House was the first to threaten Obama's impeachment, exposed Hillary selling steel to the Iranians, and blocked both Obama's immigration and gun bills from even reaching the House. But Obama holdovers came after him in federal court with trumped up charges and have locked our guy up. Like many others, he was on Obama's hit list. Steve fought for us in Congress. Now we need to fight for him. Don't abandon this wounded hero on the battlefield. Let's help cover his massive legal costs. To chip in $5 or more, text the word FIGHT to 444-999. That's FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, to 444-999, or go to defendapatriot.com. That's defendapatriot.com.
Venus is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Welcome back to Blood River Radio. We've got an outstanding guest, Dr. Kevin McDonald, and I'm going to let him finish up where he left off about the influences on white Western liberal tradition.
As I say, the book is quite historical, and it's not for everybody, frankly. It is an academic book, and I get into a lot of history of the family, history of the Catholic Church, history of the slave trade, and history, a lot of some American intellectual history and so on. The point is to talk about what I regard now as a major flaw in our in the Western peoples. You know, if you think about it, only the West is being inundated. Even Eastern Europe is resisting this pretty strongly. But Western Europe, and especially Northwestern Europe, you look at Sweden, look at the Nordic countries, I have a lot on that because these countries have just, the political correctness is completely run amok there. I mean, they are they're admitting these people. They're saying that they have no Swedish culture. That. So I'm trying to understand that, and I do think that, as I say, I think that the South has been relatively free from that. Although going to conferences like with the League of the South. And so on. I have, seen that, they will say that, things are not what they used to be, and that this culture of liberalism has made great inroads there. But I still think that Southern males are really our best hope at this point. They seem relatively immune to this guilt mongering that is so common, but I do think that Northern European peoples, and this is my argument. I am an evolutionary psychologist, biologist, and so I see this as genetically influenced. I think that Northern
what European influence? I'm sorry. You see it as a what influence?
That's under biological influence. There are genetic influences. I see this. What I trace in my book, the big burden of the book is to show that these differences between the northern Northwestern and Southern Europe are persistent. They've been going on for, you know, 2,000 years at least, or more than that, really. That the Southern Europe was colonized by very different people, and they don't have the same sense of individualism. You still see that in the south of France, for example, south of Italy. They're not the same, and they don't. They had not been prone to individualism. Individualism, on one hand, has been really a force of dynamism in Western culture. You know, this is what produced capitalism and incredible inventiveness and technology and all the things that we have done. It's been a huge boon to us and to mankind, I suppose you could say. But, if we have to rein in our individualism. We have to realize we have to be part of a group. We have to understand that we're people. And we have interests, and we have to, we have to pursue those interests if we're going to survive. And we're living in a time, when we really are threatened.
And that's a really interesting point you raised there, Dr. McDonald. Anne Rand is a very popular writer. You know, and her hyper-individualistic characters like Howard Rourke and everything are very admirable because of how they always accomplish these things against all the odds. You know, like Howard Rourke, the rogue architect who will not conform, and then lo and behold, Edward Tuohy and all the people that are trying to censor Howard Rourke are basically communists. And so, but it's this hyper ruggedized individualism that she went to a little bit of an excess in, and what you're talking about raises such an interesting paradox because it's our nature as humans, I think, to get caught up in extremes in one extreme or the other. And the funny thing is that it's not a one or the other proposition. You know, you can be a cohesive group like we so desperately need to be, as you're saying. And what makes a strong group? A group of very individualistic people who have a very pronounced sense of their identity and who they are. And you can't really have a sense of identity without also being able to identify as an individual who is a part of that broader lineage and everything. So. Yeah. It's a little bit of a paradox, I would say. Would you agree with that statement? How would you feel like, what would your advice be to folks out there in the audience who recognize the inherent truth in what you're saying in terms of how they could temper that need, that drive that we all have to be individualistic with this knowledge of who we are and recognizing the importance of us banding together as people?
Yeah, I think that we do tend to be individualistic. And as I say, that's had a lot of good things about it. But and one of the things I noticed in writing Culture of Critique, my book on Jewish influence and political movements, and was that when I had a chapter on the Frankfurt School, I noticed that they were actually advocating individualism for our people. That is, what they don't want is someone who's very ethnocentric, who has a strong sense of his people. And if you think about, what happened with National Socialism in Germany in the 1930s, they had a strong sense of being part of a group. You know, they got rid of the individualism. So we can do that kind of thing. What we have to do then is to realize that individualism, is a defect. And I think these Jewish intellectuals, especially with the Frankfurt School, beginning with the Frankfurt School, they started to really see the problem as being white ethnocentrism. Before that, they thought of the problem with white society. They've always been, this real strong revolutionary anti-white attitude. But before that, it was really Marxism, class struggle. But then they realized class struggle wasn't really what was happening, that the working class in Germany had voted for Hitler. And they realized that this is not about class. It's about race. It's about ethnicity. And their ideal person was the absolute individual, freed from all ties, even freed from their families. I mean, the whole point of their writing was the authoritarian personality, or their famous book was to say the individual has to cut himself off from his family, from his parents, from has to feel completely independent. And that's what they want. They want us to be completely without any ties to our people or anything else. At the same time, where they keep their ties, of course. They very strong Jewish networks still existing, you know, very, very strong in the media, in the financial world, the political world, and everywhere else. So we have to learn to, you know, have a sense of our people and to be able to, you know, cohere together to form these networks that are helping each other and get rid of these, some of the individualism. I view it as a temporary thing. I would hope that we could become more collectivist for a while, really, you know, get on page with advancing our interests of our group, our race, our people. But then, you know, when we win, that we would resort more to, we would revert to more of an individualistic society, but regulated. The individualism always has to be regulated. For one thing, immigration, because you've got these companies now that want to import cheap labor. They don't care about the demographic future. They got a lot of money. They, you know, and it's cheap labor, and so it's good for them. Personally, even going back to the 19th century, you've had to control these capitals.
Dr. Kevin McDonald, we have to go to a short break, and we'll get back and let you finish up as soon as we're done with these commercials.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
President Trump's defense team has wrapped up for the weekend in the Senate impeachment trial. White House legal counsel Pat Cipollone started by saying the president has done nothing wrong, and he outlined how the defense plans to prove that by countering much of what the prosecution said.
President Trump has a strong record of support for Ukraine. You will hear that from the witnesses in their record.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer responded.
The president's counsel did something that they did not intend. They made a really compelling case for why the Senate should call witnesses and documents. They kept saying there are no eyewitness accounts, but there are people who have eyewitness accounts. The very four witnesses and the very four sets of documents that we have asked for.
This is USA Radio News.
Welcome to Tax Talk with Hollywood legend Bob Eubanks.
You know, as part of Hollywood for a long time, I've seen my fair share of celebrities get in trouble with the IRS. Well, there's one name I trust, the Tax Defense Group. They're the most trusted name in tax. So if you owe more than $10,000 to the IRS, you really need to call my friends at the Tax Defense Group. Ignoring the IRS is not the solution. They can garnish your paycheck, levy your bank accounts, seize your home or business. But the Tax Defense Group could put a stop to all of that and tailor a program that would reduce your tax debt to pennies on the dollar. You gotta love that. So don't just take my word for it. Call them. Find out for yourself. They offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. And they're open 24 hours a day because they know that tax debt doesn't sleep either.
Call now for your free and confidential tax analysis from the most trusted name in tax. Call 800-832-1594.
800-832-1594. Turkey says the death toll has increased to 22 people after an earthquake in the eastern part of the country. The 6.7 magnitude quake struck on Friday evening and it downed at least 10 buildings. According to Turkey's Disaster and Emergency Authority, rescuers pulled at least 42 people from the damaged, collapsed buildings. The Disaster and Emergency Authority said over 1,000 people were injured and rescue operations are underway in the wreckage of three more buildings. Police say a woman shot and killed a retired Illinois state trooper and also wounded two other officers before shooting herself at a cigar bar in Chicago on Friday night. State Police Director Brian Kelly.
Retired Trooper Reeves succumbed to his injuries at a local area hospital. Trooper Caton Bullock and retired Special Agent Lloyd Graham are both currently hospitalized in stable condition after sustaining serious injuries.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
We're going to jump right back into this interview. Dr. Kevin McDonald, I've got a question for you. So maybe your book doesn't address this issue, but I'd like to know, what can our people do to start rekindling this groupthink mentality? What can we do to start encouraging working together again?
Well, I just, you know, listening to that music you're playing is, you know, it's the kind of thing. What is that again? I've heard it several times.
That's the Horst Wiesel song.
What is it?
That's the Horst Wiesel song out of Germany. It's the blood flag song that as they were marching down the streets of Munich, they were shot at, and one of the fellows that was marching with Mr. Hitler, the Führer, was Horst Wiesel. So it's a inspiring song in that sense.
It's extremely inspiring, and it's the kind of thing that it does give you a sense. You know, if you sing it, you hear that. You know, I think music does have that ability to pull people together, and that's a good example of that. But what can we do? I have a chapter on various psychological mechanisms. I do think that white people are becoming more ethnocentric. We're becoming more aware of our identity, and part of the reason, I think one of the main reasons, is we're seeing so much anti-white hate out there now. You see it all the time. I mean, every day something is going on. I mean, like, for example, today, I see this article that the art history department at Yale University has canceled this course, which was basically a survey history course on Western art, because, you know, it's too Western, it's too white. And you know, that's the kind of thing that you see all the time now. You see, you know, op-eds in the New York Times or Washington Post or Slate or just really directing hate at white people. And I think that's the kind of thing that motivates white people to become more identify more. And the other thing is that I point out that there's a lot of literature now that white people who are told that they are going to be a minority soon become far more conservative and more questioning on immigration. And of course, that is something that the media does not want to stress. So you're not going to see a lot of, you know, popular, you know, news. And you know, people like you and I and your audience probably are aware of this threat from immigration. But a lot of people really don't get it. They you know, they're living in a fairly white area. They feel things are going okay, and they don't really worry about it. But, you know, it's not going to be long before this, you know, white people will not be able to get a president of their choice. Already it's like 45% of the votes of Democrats go to are non-white, and it's going to be probably 50% the next election. So, we are under threat. But I think those are the forces that are making us more ethnocentric. And I do think that at some point there will be a political crisis. I think that, in fact, the last two or three pages of my book, I do talk about the possibility of civil war, too, that there is some kind of, you know, that we are so polarized now. We cannot talk to each other. There's so much hate. And really, a lot of the hate, again, is directed against white people. So I do think that there are forces that are making us more aware of our identity, and more aware that our interests are not being met by this by the current status quo. But you know, we have a long way to go, and a very long way to go. Sometimes it does seem that we are, you know, there's just too much power arrayed against us. We just have an article today, I posted yesterday, actually, on National Observer. It's still the main article on National Observer, and it's by someone who calls himself John Q. Publius. He's a sort of new writer for National Observer, but he's very good, and he does it's sort of an update on Jewish influence in the media, and Jewish wealth, and it's just amazing to see it. I mean, there's just almost
I read that article. That article... I'm going to tell our audience, that article he's referencing right there, I read it, and the author spares nothing. He goes into every detail of who owns what and how they own it in this country. I mean, and you can see very clearly the threats against us that Dr. McDonald's talking about.
Yeah,
so I encourage how can our audience go read that article again?
Well, the OxfordObserver.net, online, it's our featured article, the OxfordObserver.net. He also talks about Jewish influence in the media in Europe. I mean, they own eight of the nine top newspapers in Sweden, for example, and they own media television networks in Poland and
Estonia and Bulgaria.
So I mean, it's not like it's restricted to the West, in Latvia, or just places like that. And it's not just the big CBS, NBC. It's like small newspapers. They've made a big thing of these big New York companies have bought up the small town newspapers across the country. When I was growing up, my local newspaper was the Oshkosh Northwestern, and it was very sort of rock rib conservative, Midwestern conservative from Wisconsin. Now it's owned by some big Jewish media company, and it's very liberal. It has changed. It's probably quite a long time now, but that's typical throughout the country. It's media, big and small, has been swallowed up by these people. And he has a big thing on the music industry. It's like 90% of the music industry in this country is run by like three Jewish firms. Then you've got the big internet firms now, Facebook, Google, that are basically Jewish firms, and they're hugely influential in social media. YouTube is part of Google, and it is huge.
If I may interject a thought here too, that's folks. This is why what Dr. McDonald. What Sam is doing, what Dr. McDonald is doing with his publishing, writing of books, his many articles and essays he's authored. This is why Sam and Bushman, owner of the radio network that we're broadcasting on, what Eddie's doing. This is why all this stuff is so important. Our enemies, the people who have arrayed themselves against us, who are foisting all of these oppressions upon our people throughout the Western world, they understand the power of media. And this is why what Dr. McDonald, what's being done on this radio network, why it's so important, and why the hard copy, contrary to what some people opine about, it's alive and well. Dr. McDonald's latest book, which we're talking about on the show here, is a great example of this, and the article we're referencing right now on the Oxford Digital Observer. So, media is incredibly important and is incredibly significant, and that's a good answer too, just in terms of what to do on a day-to-day basis, just fighting back blow for blow against the incessant tidal wave of lies that our enemy is putting out there. And I say blow for blow. We can't compete blow for blow in terms of what they're putting out there. Case in point, their illicit control, disproportionate control over the media that you're referencing, Dr. McDonald. But we don't have to be able to compete blow for blow when we have the truth.
The truth helps. It certainly helps. You had the truth. And we have to realize, though, these people are very powerful, and they want to get rid of free speech entirely. They want to put us in prison. They want you and me in cells next to each other or something. They hate the First Amendment. There's a great article by Eric Stryker that was syndicated on Uns.com, the Uns Review. Great article on free speech and Jewish involvement in it. I've written some of the same things myself, but they do not like the First Amendment, and they are getting around it. I mean, the executive order that Trump signed about the BDS movement, the boycott, boycott, divestment, and sanction movement, which is an anti-Israel movement, they have basically shut those people down. And if they You know, if you try to boycott Israel for any reason, you're going to, you know, come up against the you know, the law, and pay big fines, maybe go to jail. Even though it really violates the First Amendment, but it has yet to be litigated. We'll see what happens, but we have three Jewish justices on the Supreme Court now, and when you combine that with Sotomayor, and then you have if the Democrat gets in and can appoint some justices, it's all over for the First Amendment. We will have criminal penalties for things that I say, things that you say.
Well, Dr. McDonald, we will be right back. Go make yourself some coffee or something. This is getting interesting, so we've got a lot more to talk about. Stay tuned, folks.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, "By having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids."
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. By a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues that affect the American West, its people, lifestyles, lands, and wildlife. The Loving Liberty Radio Network is proud to support the publisher's efforts to provide an active forum for solutions that preserve the vanishing American cowboy, farmer, and sheepherder. Each issue contains informative articles on life in the American West, along with breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of the cowboy spirit in our day. Each issue of Range Magazine also features great gift ideas, like the 2020 Real Buckaroo Calendar and the book Tales from Out There. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Just click on the shopping cart. The Loving Liberty Radio Network salutes the spirit of the American West and those who are keeping it alive at Range Magazine.
Welcome back to the show, folks. So, Dr. Kevin McDonald, in this last segment, I wanted you to quickly let our audience know how they can support your work and where they can pick up your book at.
Yeah, my book's on Amazon, believe it or not.
You're the one that got on. you got through their dragnet scheme of capturing us all, yeah. Didn't you?
Well, you know, it really is. It's an academic book, and it doesn't, unless you really read it, you wouldn't realize how it does talk about Jewish power at the end, quite a bit towards the end of the book.
Anyway, it's on Amazon. And Post Culture Peak is still available. It's on Barnes & Noble, though, not on Amazon. Your website, we're just talking about the article, the current article right now, is a very important article on Jewish media dominance and other issues related to that. Actually, at the OccidentalObserver.net. I edit that, and that's very important to me, I think. The other one is National Quarterly. It's a more academic magazine. TOQ Online. TOQ Online is how to get a subscription to that. We need subscription because, like many places, we've been deplatformed. You know, we can't use credit cards. They can't use PayPal and that sort of thing because the big financial institutions have done the bidding of these activist groups. And they won't process our money. So anyway, that's what really what that's what I'm about right these days.
Jacob.
Yes, I am here.
So, well, Dr. McDonald, this is interesting. When in your studies, did you come across anything relating to the white slavery that's happened to our people?
You know, I did. It wasn't a focus of what I did, but I know there is a history of that. White slavery is often used as a name for prostitution of white women. Certainly, there is a history of that. And quite a large Jewish involvement, actually, in Europe in the early part of the century, in the 19th century. But it's not something I've really researched.
On that same note, you're familiar, though, with, say, Michael Hoffman's work, White Cargo, or... I believe was he also the one that authored They Were White, They Were Slaves, Matt? I want to say it was him. But you're familiar with those works in particular, though, aren't you, Dr. McDonald?
Yeah, I've heard some of Michael. I'm not familiar with that work.
I understand, yeah. Well, it's almost a separate field of study in and of itself. I mean,
it is.
I've been in a more than a few situations now where just trying to address someone's, you know, some lefty's claims about slavery, I find myself almost giving a whole lecture just on the history of slavery and everything. And I mean, it's one of those things where you make a couple of points, and next thing you know, you can't really reference how only a small percentage of Southerners even owned slaves without talking about slaves coming into the country through northern ports, and then you can't talk about that without talking about how black slaves only became a commodity in the U.S. because all the white slaves that they were using very heavily out in the tropics would die very easily.
Yeah, I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah,
we had an article in that, an actual Observer, about how white slaves were actually less valued because the blacks were... it's a sort of history. And if you think about it, you know, the feudal times in Europe, basically, it was not exactly slavery, but pretty close. People were tied to the land, they could inherit property, but it was close to slavery. It took a long time to disappear. You know, Roman culture had slaves, so it's part of the past. It didn't disappear overnight. It didn't disappear until the early modern era. So.
Well, I was mainly interested and curious if it affected our culture as much as I would think it did. You know, what you would have to have said about that in your book or anything at all. I don't know.
Well, the main part of your thing, when I talk about slavery in the book, the main thing is to talk about how the slave trade was ended. You know, the white people are the only people that ever ended slavery for moral reasons. Slavery still exists in Africa. It's become in the Arab world for, you know, it's never been repudiated. Jewish law is a very, very elaborate law on slavery because they were involved in slavery. and famous as slave traders for centuries. So that the point of my book is to focus on white people as having this moral imperative to end the slave trade. We're the only, and so that's a big part of my book is that, the sort of moral urge. I mean, I really think that white people won't do anything unless they think it's the moral thing to do. And so one of the big hurdles we have is that because this hostile group controls the media, that they keep getting messages that if you identify as white, that's evil. If you have a sense of white interest, that's evil. And so those are the things that we're up against now, that white people feel immoral for identifying as white. So what I'm trying to understand is this white centric morality trying to do the right thing. Because that was really what was motivating people in slave during the era when slavery was ended in Britain. It was very religious, very moral, and it was very universalistic. I mean, it had a lot of the same ideas that we see now, that blacks and whites are just the same, that the whites are holding black people, and they would emphasize the suffering of slaves. And would produce empathy in the audience. White people are very prone to empathy. I have a section on white personality. I talk about whites being more empathic, more prone to the moral emotions than other peoples. Because, this kind of argument is not going to work, say, with black people in Africa or China or someplace. But in the West, it really works to try to make people feel guilty, to try to frame things as moral issues. That's what the media is doing, and it resonates with white people in a way it doesn't really resonate with anybody else. It certainly doesn't resonate with Jews. If you can condemn Jewish behavior like in Israel, all you want, it's like water off a duck's back. It doesn't make any effect at all. They don't respond to, well, you're being immoral to the Palestinians. It's like irrelevant. They don't feel guilt about that.
Do you think they're biologically incapable?
I really do. You think about it, and people are often mentioning this, Jews have been expelled from 200 countries or 200, governments have expelled Jews over the centuries. And you'd think Jews would say to themselves, what are we doing wrong? But no, they never do. It's always the fault of the people who dislike them. And they never try to understand things from the other person's point of view. It's always apologetic. It's always making the other person into the evil one. And it never stops. And then there's a lot of academics now, PhDs, very intelligent people, but when they write about stuff, They just rationalize Jewish behavior, and they condemn the behavior of people who have not liked Jews over history. And you can go back as far as you want in Western history, and also just in Arab lands. These people see themselves as separate. They see themselves as having different interests, and really as hating the West. I mean, Jewish point of view, Western history is just one long persecution. You start out with the Romans burning down the temple, destroying the temple, and then you have the early Christians, the early church, with the church fathers hating the Jews. And then you have the Middle Ages, where sometimes Jews were singled out and they were expelled because of money lending and this and that. Then you have the pogroms in Russia, and then you have the Holocaust. That's Western history in a nutshell. This is what happened. Bad things that happened to Jews. And they never look at their own behavior. Never. It's just not done. And they blot it out. It's just not part of their consciousness. And I'm convinced, in my second book, I was in anti-Semitism. The last chapter of the book was on Jewish self-deception. And the idea is that Jews convince themselves, they actually deceive themselves into thinking these things about anti-Semitism.
Well, folks, we've come to the end, and it's actually been too short of a time. We've got to have Dr. Kevin McDonald come back on. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you from Sam Bushman. Jacob, thank you. And thank you, Dr. Kevin McDonald, for coming on. Eddie Miller, hope you start feeling better. And this is Matt. We're signing off. Thank you for listening to Blood River Radio, and have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.